What's up, guys? It's Andrea. Today, we think the Klingons would appreciate Rose Nylund's cooking. Wesley is actually being age-appropriate. And we ask the question, how creepy is it to have your mom encourage your pleasure? Come nerd out with us.
Welcome to the TNG Podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
Hey, I'm your co-host, Andrea. Today, we're talking Season 5, Episode 6, The Game. This episode was written by Brandon Braga and directed by Corey Allen. Wesley Crusher visits the Enterprise, only to see everyone behaving strangely on account of an addictive, mind-controlling game. So, yikes.
Bum, bum, bum.
This feels like I went on vacation and I got back from vacation and everybody is different now, which is like,
yeah, creepy.
Uh-oh.
Creepy, but such a great storyline. Like, I went away, I came back and everyone else is different. Usually it's the other way. Someone comes back and they're changed, which actually both happened in this episode. Someone comes back and they're changed. Someone else comes back and everyone else is changed. Okay. My initial thoughts was, I am so excited to see Wesley again. That's all I said. It just was and I remember this episode as a kid. I remember it being weird. I don't remember all the details. I remember the game. I remember it being weird. I definitely didn't remember as Ashley Judd because I don't think she was super famous at the time yet. But I do remember being like, oh, Wesley's back. Wesley's back, because he had been gone away at school for so long. And I just want to give the writers another kudos for writing him off the show that way, in such a way that we get to still get glimpses of him from time to time, is just really wonderful as a viewer, being that he was, you know, such eye candy for me as a little girl. Great character. It's like, oh, I'm so glad that whenever he pops up in a cameo, it's just wonderful. But yeah, what were your initial thoughts?
I mean, I had very similar initial thoughts where I was like, Wesley's back. And like, so many great things are happening in this episode. I remember him and Ashley Judd, like being a couple on the show for this episode. I remember even as a little kid, I remember her, like she wasn't super, super famous yet, but I remember being so struck by just like how beautiful she is. She's so beautiful.
She's freaking flawless.
She looks like a painting. Like, she does. It's like, she looks like some sort of AI configuration of like a beautiful woman or some shit. It's like, what?
Thanks, in the Matrix. Hell?
I remember as a little girl being like, wow, she's so pretty. And Wesley is so like handsome and they just make such a pretty couple. And like, I remember that as a kid. I also very much remember all the like O faces that everybody's making when they play the game. And it makes me deeply uncomfortable to see Beverly like,
yeah,
you know, doing the like little gaspies. Yep. I was like, I don't like that.
I watched the show on closed captions so I can get the people's names and the names of the colonies and whatever else.
Yeah.
Correct. And on that scene where Beverly was hyperventilating, the closed caption said gasps of excitement or something like that. Deep gasps of pleasure. Ugh. That's what it said. And I was like, in closed caption, it's cringy.
You're creepy even in closed caption.
I mean, I appreciate that for the hearing impaired. They can get the full feel of what's going on in this scene, even though you can't hear it. You still
get the uncomfortable feeling.
Oof. Yep.
Oof, oof, oof. Yeah. I do have some trivia that I'll sprinkle here and there. But shall we just jump right in?
Yeah, let's do it. So in one of our previous, I think it was last week that we did Disaster or the week before?
It was last week.
So
last week was Disaster.
One of our listeners posted on our Instagram that at the beginning of that episode, you know, Riker's kind of flirting with this terraformer. And he goes, wow, Riker's banging a townie. What a surprise, or something like that.
That killed me. Like this person is so effing funny. Like every time they post something on our Instagram, I'm like, oh, what did they say? Because they're so fucking funny. And now the bar has been set really high.
I know, right? Right. So now he has to post for the rest of his life and try to be really funny. No pressure. So when this episode started, that's exactly what I wrote in my notes. I was like, oh, Riker's banging another townie.
That's what I said. I was like, Riker's on Risa and he's finding Jamal Haran with some skanky ass redhead. That's what I wrote. I
mean, it looked like they're having fun and having a good time. I do feel like this scene went on a bit too long. But that's probably just because I didn't super care about Riker's love life. Cause there's no built-in emotional interest. This isn't like Angel One where he's hooking up with the prime leader of the whole world. And you're like, ooh, is this okay politically? Like, what's going on? This isn't like that. This is just like some random hookup. And she's not even a terraformer or anybody we care about. So I was like, all right, let's move this along. Yeah. Like, we get it. They're having fun and let's move it along. But I guess we needed that long drawn out ridiculousness to see how goofy she is, to see why she would introduce a game of all things. And what I really love about this episode is that this game becomes a bit of a mystery. Like, when you first see it, it's just kind of dumb. Like, I didn't even remember as a kid thinking that CGI was really dumb.
The CGI was so dumb, but it was very on par with games in 1991. They all looked like that. They all had what struck me was the colors, like the neon yellow and neon, like red and orange and blue. Like, you know, it was just so early 90s video games. I remember my brother playing a game called Sky Roads, where it's just like a car on a road in space. And like, you have to jump from one platform to the other. Otherwise the car like falls down into like space and then you have to start over. But it was actually, I remember playing the game. It was really fun back in the day. Shout out to anybody who remembers Sky Roads of all games, but like, or we played Rad Racer on original Nintendo. Like, they were all that color.
Yeah. Or
like,
even Mario Brothers,
like oranges and blues.
Same. Those like oranges, reds. And yeah,
there is something that is a couple of things in this scene that jump out at me. One is Etana's like got the comm badge and she's like, come find me, you know, sexy, sexy game of tag. And she ends up throwing the comm badge out the window. And he's like, I can't believe you did that. And then the next thing you just see him like lying down and going, ah. And I'm like, you didn't go get your comm badge? That's kind of important.
Yeah,
buddy.
I thought that too.
That's probably the most important thing. Like, but where, I also why thought, aren't you getting?
He's on vacation. He's probably not expecting any emergency calls. The Enterprise is not even going to be in range till XYZ date. So he's probably like, you know, it's like when your cell phone's in another room.
Yeah, you're like,
yeah, I'll just go get it later. That's how I felt. Like, he's not on duty at all. He's on vacation.
Oh, see, but I thought immediately if there's an emergency and Picard is like, where have you been? I've been calling you for like 2 days. It's like, oh, what had happened was this girl and I were playing sexy tag and she threw it out the window. Yeah. Also, did you notice Etana's contact lenses?
No.
Her lenses were so, her pupils went sideways, like slits, like cats have slits.
No way.
But instead of going up and down, they went sideways, almost like an octopus.
So I'll have to look at that again.
Cool. So cool. By the way, yeah, in last week's episode, Disaster, you were telling me that like Worf's was creepy, lurking. Like listening in and lurking. And we often will tell each other like, oh, go back and watch this bit to see this thing. And like, we always forget to do it. But I actually went back and I watched it. And I was dying laughing. He was so lurking. He was so lurking.
Weren't you? Like, I was expecting him to chime in the conversation at some point instead of just standing directly behind the O'Brien.
And then looking over his shoulder and watching them talk. It's like, hey, buddy, you would be less conspicuous if you were sticking your head out of a bush. Like, so creepy.
Yep.
Anyway. Okay, so now Riker's like, this game is super fun. And vacation's over and we see him back on the Enterprise. And they had this like shortened timetable to complete their exploration of the sector before heading off to Oceanus 4 for some diplomatic mission. It's not really an issue. It's not even a MacGuffin. It's just like a side thing that's going on. But there are like multiple teams of scientists who need equipment to do their exploration. And so they're like, okay, now you guys are going to have to figure out who's using what equipment when, because everybody's sort of fighting over the equipment. And we only have like 2 weeks to explore this instead of like 5 weeks or whatever.
Yeah. So they only have 2 weeks now and they have 15 different science teams. And as we see in this episode, the game ends up creating this crazy rage and takes over everyone's thoughts. And I just thought to myself, well, that's a good waste of time. I mean, they spent all this time organizing this really like, you know, once in a lifetime trip or whatever. 15 teams are vying for 2 weeks of time. They only have, you know, 12 minutes with the satellite, 5 minutes in the runabout, or who knows what.
Yeah.
And now everyone's addicted, sitting in 10 forward playing this game and getting nothing done. And sure, they can be like, but it was mind control. But what's all the people who are, you know, paying them or whatever, they don't have currency in this time. But what are all the people who are waiting for the results of this research going to say when they come back with absolutely nothing to show for their time because they were playing a game for the entire 2 weeks? Anyways, that's all with that storyline. There's really nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that was really it. I mean, from there on, it's just like, hey, Wesley is back.
Yeah,
this is lovely. And we're going to put you to work to help sort of figure out and configure and calibrate this equipment so the teams can use it at the quickest rate of speed or whatever. But really, that's it for that. So like, cool.
Glad. And that's kind of how Wes and Ashley Judd meet. It's because they're both working on the project.
Now, before we get to the really important part, which is Wesley's homecoming, we find Riker coming into 10 forward and he lands on Troy, who's eating a triple chocolate sundae. And I'm going to tell you, Marina Sirtis hated that Troy had such a chocolate addiction, because the chocolate would get like hot under the stage lights and it would get all runny and stuff. And so she had to do take after take after take of eating this chocolate. And she would have a spit bucket to spit it out between takes, because with her costume being so tight, like she couldn't just eat like pounds of chocolate a day and not, you know, she couldn't gain weight for her costume.
Which really sucks. And, but I have to say,
yeah,
she made that eating that sundae look so good. I was like, this is mindful eating right there. It's like, taste each flavor, taste it on your tongue, feel the emotion. I was like, I kind of want a sundae now. Like, okay.
Yes. There are so many takeaways I got from TNG as a little kid that I wanted to like emulate, because I just loved the show so much. This was another one of those takeaways. Like that lesson that she gives Riker on the proper way that like to eat the ice cream, I took that as a little kid as like the ice cream Bible. And I rarely ever eat ice cream because I'm not a super sweet tooth. But when I do eat ice cream, it's just like Troy. I swirl the fudge around the outside and then I scoop some chocolate in, like, just like that. Like that was like the lesson on how to eat ice cream as a kid. And I love that like TNG, this was such a throwaway little scene, but like the fact that those little scenes can have impacts like that is just astounding to me. And it shows what a great show it is. And I'd actually like to hear from you guys as listeners. Is there anything you took as like gospel, you know, from Star Trek that isn't necessarily the main message of Star Trek, but like a little takeaway like this, like the ice cream or the symbol in masks or anything where you're like, oh yeah, ever since I saw that, I've been doing XYZ just like that. I really want to hear from you guys. Info at thetngpodcast.com. Please send us an email and let us know how it's impacted you in like weird and small and unexpected
ways. And we read every single email and respond to all of them. So
and we respond to every single one because we love that you guys take the time to reach out to us. But yeah, so Troy is like loving this chocolate and Riker's like, if you like chocolate, let me tell you about something I brought back from Ryza that's even better.
And I was like, but is it though? Turns out I guess it is. I mean, she was down. Like I would be down too. It sounds very friendly. Like, let's just play a game. It's like, I like games. It sounds super harmless. And I think that is the genius of this particular plot. It's so harmless.
Yes. If somebody said, try this drug, I'd be like, no, I'm good. But if somebody's like, hey, there's this cool game I brought back. Everybody loves it. You should play it. It's like, okay, I wouldn't think twice. And that to me is what stands out in a weird way from this episode where Wesley is suddenly like a 65-year-old woman who's like concerned about her grandkids doing something that could be dangerous. Like, let's investigate this game before we whatever. It's like, but it's Uno. Like how bad could it be for you?
Well, but if the entire ship was playing Uno and couldn't stop playing Uno, then I could see being like, well, that's something's a little weird about this game of Uno. Why is it so much fun? I feel like it shouldn't be this much.
I mean, the fun, I know draw spread. Four is like fun, but
yeah, the fun shouldn't spread quite like this. But so, okay. So we have this moment, which is just a wonderful moment in this episode. And honestly, like I loved this episode. I love this episode. And I always skip it because I think it's so cringy with the whole, you know, orgasm faces. But in forcing myself to rewatch it, I was like, there's a legit mystery going on and I don't know how they get to the bottom of it. And I was really like on the edge of my seat. So in the next scene, Wesley arrives in the transporter room and who is there but Chief O'Brien. This is where Chief O'Brien belongs. Totally makes sense for him to be in this scene. Couple things that happen here. One, we learn that their baby that they had a couple episodes ago is named Molly, their little daughter.
Yeah, last week.
Yeah, was that in Disaster? No, that was in That was in Disaster.
That was Disaster.
Yeah, their baby last week. Their little daughter is named Molly, which is adorbs.
Cute name.
And also we noticed that Beverly is not there, which I thought was super lame. And then I thought to myself, maybe they're gonna like surprise him later. Which they did, but still, she could have met him at the transporter room and walked him to the surprise place.
Yeah.
Although
I will say it wouldn't seem super off brand for her to not be able to be there because duty calls. Right. And like,
I guess so.
I think that's part of understanding the life of like being like an army brat where it's like, you know, I know my mom can't come right now because she's on a mission to whatever, whatever, whatever. It's like, Beverly has always put her duty and responsibility as a doctor, I think even before her responsibility as a mother, to be honest. And she's just the consummate professional. So I could see that he's a little disappointed that no one came to welcome him. But I did love that O'Brien was like, well, let me call Worf, or let me call up to the bridge and see if it's okay that you pop into this big senior staff meeting they're having. And Worf is like, I forget the words he actually said.
Yeah. He said something like, I suppose that's acceptable.
Yes. That's what he said. I suppose that's acceptable. And I love that, you know, Wesley's like, okay, I'll just head over there. And when he turns to look away, he kind of looks sad. And I was like, it's okay, Wesley. And I didn't remember that they had a surprise party for him. So in my writing, I was like, I hope they have a surprise party for him.
You were thinking that's the same thing. I was thinking, like, they must have a surprise. Like, come on.
They've got something. And he does pop by to the observation lounge to say hello. And it is a surprise party. And Worf even made him a Karbokian pound cake from scratch as a treat. And I was like, oh, don't eat it, Wesley. It's probably got eggshells in it. And it's like a foot of something.
And like uncooked worms and whatever. It's called
gah surprise cake, or something.
The worst surprise you could ever want. But in this surprise scene,
sorry, I gotta say, there's an episode of the Golden Girls where Rose makes a surprise cake and they're like, well, what's in it? She's like, herring. That's what the surprise is. And they're like, that's totally what that reminds me of. It's herring surprise. Anyway, I think I'm going to need to make a pound cake, and I'm going to call it Karbokian pound cake, and I will post it on our Instagram at the TNG podcast so you guys can comment.
Well, now you have to do it.
It will just be a pound cake, though. It won't have any feet of anything or snouts or
maybe
anything
put some
in
like red dye or frosting or sprinkles or something so we can pretend like it's the blood of our enemies.
Yes, or something. It's something. Oh, by the way, in the herring cake, I think she put red hots for the eyes. It's like just even more disgusting.
That took me a minute. I was like, red hots? What the F?
Red hots, the candy. Candies for this herring cake, which is just beyond disgusting. Mm. Anyway, I feel like the Klingons would love Rose's cooking, by the way. I'm just saying. We're doing 90s crossover
here. She cooks like a warrior.
The Klingons would love the fuck out of Rose's St. Olaf cooking.
I am now nauseous, so thanks for that. Inside of the...
Okay, sorry.
No, you're not. Okay. I love this scene in the observation lounge where they surprise Wesley because... it's just really cute. And it's good to see that everybody is happy that he's here. Even the captain is there shaking his hand. And you know how the captain feels about quote unquote children, but maybe now that he's like a college age student, I don't know.
Isn't it so nice to see like Picard have this big, genuine smile when talking to
and
Wesley?
And be legitimately excited.
That just made me feel so like, yes. He greeted him in Latin and Wesley responded in Latin. I was like, this is the kind of father-son relationship I could get behind right here. This is wonderful.
Yeah, that was really sweet. And then I love Data's questions. Just like, did our attempt to make you uncomfortable, was that effective? And Wesley's like, oh yeah, I was really uncomfortable. And he's like, did our deception please you? He's like, yeah, surprises are fun. And Data's just like storing it all up like, okay, good. Deception is fun. Got it.
Did you notice that Data was like,
yes, the forced like laugh he did like a so hilarious. And it even said in the closed caption, it said contrived laughter.
I love it. Thank you, closed captioning, for never letting us down.
That was a really cute scene. And then as Data and Wesley are walking away from the party and going back to do whatever, they're just kind of chit-chatting, shooting the breeze about life in the academy and what it was like. And I really appreciated this little slice of life because you could see that Data struggled with a lot of the same things that Wesley struggled with, but in a different way, because Data was like, I was always proficient at everything. I was good at all the academics, but the socials killed me. And, you know, Andrea and I can attest to that. We work with children who have learning differences, and some of them can be really bright academically, but the socials kill them. Like the socials are super tough. And those are skills that a lot of schools don't know how to teach, but those are the skills that really help you survive in life, is getting along with other people.
Yes.
So I really felt for Data in those moments where I was like, oh, how did he ever learn?
It's understanding like, oh, we all have these like stumbling blocks, and recognizing what the stumbling blocks are is like the first step. And I love that Data and Wesley are having that conversation where, you know, Wesley can commiserate with Data, and Data can commiserate with Wesley, where it's like, oh, this prank and that prank and like, da, da, da. Like, I love it. And I love to see Wesley talking to all of the senior staff, like more like yes. equals than he yeah. has before, instead of like a bright eyed youth who's just like deer in mm-hmm. headlights, you know, to be there. I love it. He looks so grown up. I love the inverted uniform mm-hmm. colors. Absolutely love that. Did you notice he had no pips on his collar?
I did not notice that, but I did notice Ashley Judd had one pip, because I was like, I wonder how far yes, apart they are yes. in age, because they seem like not that far, yeah. but she's an ensign on the freaking Enterprise, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And he's mm-hmm. like at the Academy.
Yeah. Yeah. But remember, he was sort of held back yeah. from the Academy like once or twice, I think, before. So I could see their ages being appropriate. Yeah. It was later sort of established in the first duty episode where we have the accident mm-hmm. at the Colbert Starburst, that none of the Academy students have pips on. You don't get your pips until you get your first commission. So that's kind of cool.
Makes sense.
Anyway. Yeah. So Wesley does meet Ensign Leffler and absolutely gets the butterflies over her, which like, how could you not? Like she's this gorgeous so, and smart yeah, they're and so engaging.
Cute. It's just everything about mm-hmm. them is so cute. And as you know, as Robin walks away, Wesley's like looking at her walking away, and then he turns away, and then she turns and looks at him. And it was just like, oh, this is so cute.
Super cute.
And this, I feel like this is the first romance we've seen between kind of adolescents, right? That's not horribly awkward. I mean, she's not some kind of yeah. like light being who turns into some hairy monster, you know, it's not.
Yes. And they don't share ice cream.
They don't share ice together,
which is like,
this isn't like, you know, a lot of the awkward relationships we've seen on the show. This isn't anything with Geordi, mm-hmm. where you're just like, oh, this hurts. This is just
Geordi and the
faceplants. This isn't Riker banging townies, which Riker's super like, you know, flirtatious and socially adept and stuff. So we expect that to look pretty smooth, but, and Troy just always has these creeps always like circling her. We did have a beautiful relationship between Beverly and that and O'Dan, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, he was mm-hmm. a trill and he had to leave. So that was sad. But here we have just like this really, I don't want to say pure, but just kind of very innocent, light, fluffy summer fling. And I mm-hmm. was here for it. I was like, this just, it's not awkward. It's not forced. It's not weird. He's not yes. going all around the ship asking for advice. Yes. It's just natural. It's
yeah.
easy.
So, which is like, dude, yeah. And we know it is a perfect summer fling because we know that he has to go back to the Academy at some point. He's just here for a visit. So this is like a mm-hmm. quick, cute 2-week thing. And then we're going to stay in touch after,
yeah,
you know, which I love. Now, Dr. Crusher calls Data to sickbay to help, you know, to get some help on something. And when Data's back is turned, she deactivates him. And Troy and Riker come out of what I like to call the treachery waiting room, because where the hell were they? They were like hidden in some corner in sick bay, as though like it would have been like, you could have come up with any number of reasons why it would be cool for all three of them to be there waiting for Data, but whatever. But she flips his switch and he falls down on a table. And then she takes a laser scalpel and cuts something out of his head. Mm.
Yeah. And you're just like, man,
this is a bump.
Yeah. You're like, Data, I wish you would have never told her about your off switch and, you know, Riker and Troy.
Stop advertising it.
I yeah. wish you would have never told
Stop
them.
Stop advertising
Nothing
it.
Nothing good comes from people knowing where your off switch is, buddy.
Yes. Well, let me tell you, Brent Spiner recalled that during production of this episode, that scene where Data is deactivated, Spiner actually hit the bed so hard on his first take that he split his chin and had to go to the hospital. After returning to the set, director Corey Allen immediately asked Spiner to do this again. I was like, damn, that's cold.
He's like, we could wait an hour, but we really need the scene shot. So
yeah, I'm like, isn't there anything else you could be filming right now while I like take some like painkillers right. or something? Anyway, yeah, I don't know if you noticed this, but because I knew this little bit of trivia, I noticed that Data's chin had like a little scar kind of thing on it, like for this episode. So they must have patched it up and then put a ton of makeup over it to blend it in. But I could tell there was some kind of like a butterfly closure or something on his like kind of on
no,
his chin.
I didn't I notice. Like, I didn't but yeah, know so that. Sucks. And also, it's kind of like it reminds me of the episode you mentioned where the actor who plays Riker got like a piece of glitter or something in his eye and had to be rushed to the ER to get it removed. Had to yes. back and act or whatever. It's like the hidden
that dark was in side. The that was in the yes, that was in the
First Contact?
Q, the Robin Hood. No, that was in the Robin Hood Q episode where like a piece of the bow staff splintered and got in his eye. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that just, that's like the hidden dark side of acting that we as audience members, as fans, never have to know about or never have to see. So we just want to say thank you to all the actors who give us entertainment at great bodily harm cost.
Seriously.
And yeah, I appreciate it because that scene was great. Like when he just passes out, you're like, oh snap, something very bad is going on.
Yeah, no, it's not good. It's not good. But we have this quick little cutaway scene where Wesley is having tea with the captain. And I love that the captain clearly invited him to his personal quarters to have tea. Could you have imagined that Captain Picard would be acting like this with Wesley based on like where they were at like Encounter to Farpoint?
Yeah, never. And it reminded me of that one episode where Wesley took Picard down to some starbase because he was taking a test to get into the academy or something. And then Picard needed heart surgery. And they had that really awkward shuttle ride and they had like little tiny sandwiches with the crust cut off in the back corner of the shuttle because they didn't have space in the shuttle. Mm. Like, I feel like that was the last time they had tea together, tea and sandwiches. But this is, but that was like, we're both here and we're both hungry. And he had like a plate of sandwiches. And I think Wesley was all like, that sure does look good. And Picard was like, fine, here, you can have a sandwich. But this is different.
Not that one. That's the smoke salmon. That one's mine. I called it.
Back off,
I got dibs.
Don't make me airlock you. Yeah. But here he's like, it's clear that he's like, I want to have tea with you. And that is so special. It's so sweet. And again, this conversation, just like the conversation with Data, I love it. I just love this slice of life. Like, oh, tell me about Boothby. And is this still going on? So-and-so still teaching there. It just feels very real. Like the world building of, of Wesley engaging. Oh, and did you notice when he was walking down the hallway with Data earlier, he smiled at every single person who walked past him in the hallway.
Yes. He kind of did the like, what's up smile. Like, oh, hey man.
I
saw that. It just felt like such a homecoming, right?
Yeah, I loved it.
Now Dr. Crusher does come over to the captain who has to leave their lovely tea. And she pulls a whole, oh my God, look what happened to Data move on Picard. Mm-hmm. And Geordi's all stressed out that his buddy is deactivated. And Riker's like, Geordi, you're looking stressed. You're looking tired. If there's any changes, Dr. Crusher will be the first to, you know, you'll be the first to know. What if you relaxed with a game? And I thought, how could Geordi get hooked on the game? Because he would have to remove his visor, probably. And even still, he can't see unless it's like the Romulan thing where they like put the images straight into his brain. But I don't think like that didn't track very well.
That's a really good point.
And they kind of didn't sort of really write anything. I think they kind of glossed over it pretty
quickly. Yeah, my thoughts were that
so that we didn't poke a lot of holes in that.
It like they put it on over the visor because his visor does read like lights and whatnot. But yeah, you're right. That doesn't that doesn't track. He should have been totally fine. He and Data should have been fine, but that would have ruined the episode. Because Geordi would have been like, what's wrong with everybody? What's wrong with everybody? And he would have raised all the alarms before they were able to get the game into more people's hands. And it was very clever by having the first officer get addicted first. He was in a great position to get everyone else addicted and like really all the senior staff. And then all the senior staff can go and get all of their underlings addicted. Hey guys, let's take a break and play this game I found just so, you know, it'll be a fun bonding activity, whatever. And it just spreads all the way through the ship. Like it was actually a really clever plan. And I thought to myself when they were sitting there and they were going through Data's quarters and Geordi's like pulling his hair out, trying to figure out what's wrong with Data. I was like, how is Riker going to get him to play this game? There's no way he's just going to casually be able to bring it up. Yes. And the way he worked it in of like, man, you look so tired. You need a break. Maybe you should play this game. Yes. I was like, that's freaking genius. That's exactly how you work it in. Boom.
Yep. Yeah. Very well, you give it to the most like gregarious person who's just got a very natural way of, you know, interpersonal relations with others, just really chill at like talking to everybody and boom, there you go. Like that was like the perfect person. Now we see Leffler and Wesley are getting to know each other and they're working together. And she's talking about this rumor she's heard about his birthmark and all this stuff. And she seems to know a lot about him. So he's like, how do you know so much about me? And she's like, I've got some friends at the academy, which sounds very much like she just graduated. You know, you're still in touch with friends that you went
to the academy with. She had to just graduate to still be friends with them.
Like, yeah, because after like, you know, you graduated like 5 years ago, you kind of, you lose sort of touch with everybody. And he's like, hey, what are you doing after this? Maybe 1900 hours, meet me for coffee. And she pulls the ultimate boss move, which I love so much. And I've done this many a times where I say, you know what? I won't meet you for a drink, but I will meet you for dinner. Right. Where it's like, I'm not a coffee kind of a date. Like, you're going to give me your full attention. We're going to go to dinner at 10 forward. And I was like, yes, girl. And of course his smile about broke off of his face, 'cause it was so big. I was like, yay, this is so natural. Yeah. And he's not running around asking everybody for advice on how to approach this girl. He's just very organically kind of building this relationship.
And you can tell
her.
He's had a lot of practice at the academy. He's not an awkward little kid anymore. He's a young man.
He's not. Yeah, he absolutely is. And now he walks in on Beverly playing the game and her O faces. And I just thought, one, I don't want to see this. And two, how uncomfortable for all of the actors to have a camera right in their face and they have to make O faces over and over again, you know, and the little gasping breaths.
And you have
and
the director standing there like, no, more pleasure. Or who knows what, like what exactly are the directors?
Or louder or quieter or whatever.
Telling the actors to do in these scenes. Like, and I'm sure they're like, oh, well, like I'm an actor, so I know I'm going to be asked to do things that may be uncomfortable, but I never thought I'd have to do this in a show about space travel.
Yes, about space travel. And I'm
and a like a kid's show
out loud.
Like a family show.
Yeah. So now Wesley walks in and he's like, I gotta get ready for this date. Da, 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 da. And she's like, why don't you invite her here and we can all play the game? And I love that Wesley was like, Mom. And she was like, yeah, okay.
Right.
Even Beverly was like,
even in her
drug
induced state, she was like, yeah, that was a bad idea. I was just trying to get you to play the game. It just came out of me, but I could have thought of a smoother way
to
say that.
What if you just try for a second? She like grabs his arm. She's like, just one round. And he's like, I got to get ready.
Yeah.
God, you know, and he turns and looks very like, uh-oh, what the hell is going on? Which actually I would have been too. And he goes to 10 forward and he's having this like really lovely conversation with Robin. And she looks really cute in her off-duty clothes, just super cute. And yeah, they start noticing like everybody's playing this game. I wonder what it does. And Robin's like, you know, there's only one way to find out. You could just try it. But I love that Wesley is a little bit of a grandpa and he's like, let's not try the game. Let's test it out.
Yeah, I think he would have tried it if it had not been for the way everybody was getting hooked on it and being so weird about it.
Yeah. Like pushing
it. Yeah. People weren't pushing it. If it was just like one or two people, he'd probably be like, yeah, let's play. Mm-hmm. But since so many people were like, we can't stop playing the game. He's like, I don't think I want to start playing something that I possibly can't stop for some strange reason. Like, what kind of game is this exactly?
Yeah.
And I love two things about this date. One thing that I love is I love that they're like, you know what? We could go to one of the science labs and hook up one of the games to the computer so it can simulate a human brain and really like break down the engineering of this device. And that both Robin and Wesley were like, bet, let's do it. Like, let's keep in mind, they're on a date. Mm-hmm. And they were just talking about their lives and their families and their childhoods. And Robin mentioned that she has all these laws. She has 102 rules that she lives her life by. And rule number one is you can only count on yourself. And she learned that from her parents and all this deep stuff. But the second there's a chance, there's an engineering mystery, they're both like, oh, we're on it. And they just run off, you know, skipping to go do it. I thought that was so great. That to me was just like, this is how we know you guys are a good match. Because any other person with either of you would probably be like, we're on a date or we're off duty or like, what the
this
heck?
Isn't time to be doing
this. Yeah,
this
isn't time to go to engineering and like break down some device. But they're both like, let's do it. I love that.
Which I think is really cute. And yeah, not only does it show that they're like a good match, that sounds like exactly something that they would love to be like solving a mystery together and using their brain power together.
If not their
like
personalities.
It would be fine for each. Yeah, it would be fine for either one of them to do it on their own. But what makes it really fun is that like this cute boy wants to do it with me or this cute girl wants to do it with me. Right. Where it's like, let's go solve this mystery together. And let me tell you, were I on a date and a cute boy that I was on a date with said, hey, there's this mystery. Like, do you want to go on an expedition and solve this mystery? I'd be like, beep, beep. I'm already in the Jeep. Jump in. Let's go. Like, but that is very my personality where I'm like, get your hiking boots on. I'm like, let's go. Like, I'm all about having a backpack shovel and hitting the road and being Dora the Explorer about it. Yeah. But what they do find is that this game is super addictive and the serotonin like dump that's going on in the prefrontal lobe is like out of control. But it also can affect the user's higher reasoning ability, which I think is a really good mystery because they're like, well, if it was just a pleasurable thing,
That's one thing.
That would explain why everybody's hooked. But why does it seem to affect your higher reasoning? Like there's another level that we're not right. thinking about. And what's great is that we are also on the mystery. You know, it's the kind of mystery show, you know, there's two kinds. There's one where you like know who the murderer is from mm-hmm. the beginning and you watch everybody figure it out. Or there's one where you are also like on this mystery and like, don't know how it's going to end. And we have no idea why it's affecting higher reasoning.
Right. Because they haven't seen, like,
that is a
wrinkle. Yeah, they haven't seen any evidence of that. And all the people saying, play the game, play the game, play the game. They've seen the addiction side. They've seen people get really excited about it, but they're like, what exactly is this doing? What could it be doing to people's higher brain functions? And I love that Wesley's first thought is like, we need to tell the captain. This is a bigger deal than we thought. It's a mystery, but it's maybe dangerous. And we need to tell somebody immediately. This just makes my heart so happy, right? When you see characters usually stumble upon something really important, they kind of keep it to themselves. They want to verify first or who knows what. And then they get eaten by the monster. Yeah. And you're like, man, if you could just told someone before you went to that garage, at least when you didn't come back, we would know something happened and we would know there was a monster, right? But it's like, Wesley doesn't do that. He goes straight to the captain. And when he's in the ready room, talking to the captain, giving him his concerns, I felt like the captain was acted appropriately and saying, that's very interesting. I will definitely have an investigation. Mm-hmm. And that does sound like what the captain would say, but also I felt like his reaction was subdued. Right. And then when he put the game on, I was like, he's already one of them, because I was expecting him to be like, wait a minute, what? It's doing what? Okay. Number one, come in here. Can't confiscate all of the games. No one's allowed to play them. Send it to Jordy, have him do a full breakdown. You know, some like there would be more action in that moment, but he kind of says the right things, but he doesn't do the right things as he's saying them. That would totally blend with his character. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just off enough.
Yes. Because when Wesley's like, it's really addictive, he's like, oh, really? Huh. Right. It's the very, like, is he onto me kind of a face where it's like, it's a dick, really? Or like if you're planning somebody's surprise birthday party and they're like, you know, my birthday's coming up in like a week or whatever. And you're like, oh, you know, like trying to play this off like you have no idea or whatever. But yeah, it's just it doesn't track very well with like the Captain Picard that we know. And as soon as Wesley leaves, Picard turns around in his chair and grabs the game and puts it back on, and we're like, oh shit, he's already hooked. But the other thing is, the game was literally right behind the captain on the table, and Wesley didn't see it sitting there.
But it was behind the captain. He couldn't have seen it from in front of him. Maybe when he walked in.
He couldn't have seen it from in front. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like when he walked in, it's like, oh shit, you already have the game. And then I would play it off and be like, oh, I was just coming to invite you to
finish our tea.
See you later. Do you have any tea? Yeah. Yeah, it was literally right behind him. But the captain is now totally hooked and we're like, oh, fuck. Now, Robin and Wesley are getting major creeped by everybody playing the game because now it's everywhere. And people are starting to look like full-blown zombies when they're playing it. Like that one woman who's sitting kind of slumped over and tend forward. Yeah. And I just, and I thought to myself, as teachers, this is what it feels like when we see our kids on their goddamn phones when we're teaching a lesson.
They're
just like such zombies. And you're like, put it away. And of course, like it's an exaggeration, but like when I saw that woman, I was like, my teacher, like senses were tingling. It's like, put the device away. We're in the middle of a lesson.
Except for that they were in 10 forward. And as they're talking, you know, Wesley's like, what the heck is going on? And Robin's like, people keep asking me to play the game. And you see people stopping by trying to get them to play the game. And Wesley's like, two people stopped me in the hallway on my way here. We can't even walk 5 feet without someone saying, play the game, play the game. They're the only ones not wearing headsets on the whole ship, it seems like. And so at that moment, someone comes up and tries to get them to play the game. And Robin keeps making all these excuses, which I think is hilarious. Oh, I left my headset in my room. Oh, I just finished playing, you know, whatever. And so Wesley's finally like, she doesn't want to play, and grabs her hand, and they like,
she said no.
They run out of 10 forward before someone could just force a headset on them, whether they want it or not. And they're like, okay, something is going on here. They are the Wonderkins. So they put their heads together and they discover that Data is the only person, and we've discovered now, maybe also Jordy, but Data is the only person on the ship who cannot be affected by this game. And he mysteriously was incapacitated as soon as the game came on board. So they're like, all right, we got to get down to the bottom of this mystery. Let's go see what happened to Data. Let's go see what's wrong with him and see if maybe we can help, because he'd been trying to sneak away to see Data for like many, many times. And they've been like, no, mm-hmm. no, go do this. No. He's in good hands. No. So he's like, mm-hmm. let's go check it out. And what I love is in the next scene, when they're in sick bay scanning Data, trying to figure out what's wrong, Robin says, good thing the nurse is playing the game. So the nurse didn't even notice them coming in because the nurse yep. is playing the game. And I was like,
Nurse Ogawa is already.
But we do see her later, just like really excited.
We
about
do
the game,
see her later.
It's like, yeah. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. She's in. Yeah. And they find that like Data servos have been severed. Like the connection between his body and his brain, his like positronic net have been severed. And they're like, oh my God. And what they do is this like lovely zoom in. And I love those Elkars panels. I love those panels so much. Like I wish they existed in real life, but they do this like zoom in and find that like the connection has just been severed so cleanly that it's like, no, somebody had to have done this. And Wesley's like, there's only two people aboard the Enterprise who have enough skill to do this. And one is Geordi and the other is my mother. And that's, I think, the most terrifying mm-hmm. one is like somebody I'm very close to and trust, you know, he's close to Geordi. He trusts Geordi, but like Beverly is his mm-hmm. mother and she could have done this. It's like, oh shit. Right.
And then you're like, why? Why did somebody hurt my friend? And how are they going to fix it? Because I was looking at that and I was like, can you stick them back together? Like, I was really like, how do you fix that? You can't just do some electrical tape, right? Like, you got to like fuse the stuff in the middle.
You got something. Yeah. There's a big cut in the middle. There's a big gap in the middle. And you have to like somehow find a way to jump that gap. Now they're figuring this out. Meanwhile, Captain Picard is telling the senior staff to replicate as many games as possible and get everyone hooked. And I'm like, oh shit, it's a full on like military operation.
Including
now, even though Picard doesn't think they're in the military.
Mr. Crusher. And they're like, yes understood.
Yes. Like, yes. Because Itana has shown up and she's all business. She is no longer the skanky redhead. She is like Captain Itana of the Katarians. And she congratulates the captain on securing the Enterprise and has plans to distribute the game to star bases, other ships, and at the Academy because of the Wesley connection. So Beverly and Worf go to Wesley's quarters with the games to like force him, but he's already playing the game with Robin. And satisfied, Worf and Beverly leave. And I was like, oh no. And then I realized there were fake games. They must have like taken out all the parts in the like game and just
kept the
wearing
the
like dummy
headsets.
Ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, thank God.
And they were really like shivering and moaning and all the stuff too. So it looked like they were playing the game. And Beverly's just like, oh, isn't that sweet? And walks back out. And it's like,
I've got my son addicted.
Gosh, like you're just, yeah. And then when they take them off and they're like, all right, we've got to get to the bottom of this. This is getting really serious. And even that they had the presence of mind to put them on before the door opened, just in case the door opened, like was really, really clever. But then they're like, okay, we got to get to the bottom of this. Robin, I want you to try to find the security lockout codes and all this different stuff. I'm going to go do some other stuff on my end. All right, break. And I thought to myself, splitting up in this scenario is such a bad idea. Someone is bound to realize that neither of you is part of the plan. Because as we've discovered, when we saw the whole bridge crew just like, you know, following orders blindly, obviously they're all on the same page. So something about what's going on with these headsets is putting everybody on the same page. It's like making them like a hive mind or a collective consciousness or something.
Yes. Yes.
So I was like,
which is super creepy.
And so I was thinking it's only a matter of time before someone who's in the hive realizes you're not in the freaking hive. You're not on the plan. You're not, your voice isn't added to the thoughts or who knows what. So that was one thought I thought was like splitting up is a horrible idea because you will get caught.
Horrible idea.
The second thought I had was, why are you guys walking around without those headsets on? You see everybody else wearing those headsets. Put them on. Be like, at least pretend.
The beauty of that game is that all you see is people just wearing a headset. You don't see the playing field as the user sees it. Right. So like, you can't tell if somebody's actually playing the game or not. Just walk around with those fuckers
all
on.
The time. Yes.
Like, why would you take
the
it
the same
off?
Way you did when Beverly and Worf slipped into their quarters?
Exactly.
Just like keep them on. And I was like, first of all, you guys are going to get caught because you're not in the hive mind. But secondly, you're really going to get caught because you're not even pretending to be in the hive mind.
You're not even pretending to be in the hive mind. Yeah. And so Wesley goes off to do some work with Data. And he's like, okay, I'll meet up with you at, you know, whatever.
But we don't know he's doing work with Data, which is so fun. That was a nice surprise.
Yeah. Well, like he goes off and does some work. He meets up with Robin and Robin is acting strangely. And she's now hooked. And this is what weirds me out. Everybody else who's playing the game is just like, oh, cool. This is a game. Like Riker acted normal. Mm-hmm. Everybody's acting normal.
They did
normal.
Until they didn't.
But Robin is sitting there like, just like totally zombied out. And I'm like, after your first time playing the game, you look like a zombie. That just didn't.
But here's why it did track for me is because they all acted normal until they didn't. So in my mind, it's kind of like a sleeper cell. Like they've got their normal side of them. But then when the little switch turns on in their brain, now they're like, must play game, must record, must make more devices. Suddenly they're acting like when they were all on the bridge, they were acting very zombified because they were actively being controlled at that moment. But when they weren't being controlled, they were choosing to play the game over and over. Right. So I feel like that tracked for me because I feel like at that time, like since so many people had the headsets, like mind control was on at this point. Like level 10 has been activated. Mm. Everyone is effectively being controlled. No one's just allowed to go about doing their day anymore at this point. So that was fine for me. So they're in engineering and Robin's like, it's your turn, Wesley. And he's like, huh? And then all these people come. Yeah. And then like Riker comes out of the back and Geordi comes out of the back and they're all trying to snatch him and throw the headset on him. And he jumps over the table and runs out. And this whole scene was so exciting. I was just like, is he going to make it? Is he going to escape? Like the whole time I was like, I don't know. So he's like running and he had just told Robin like, oh, I have the site to site transport just in case things get hairy for both of us or whatever. Like he was going to make one for her too, but she was all zombified. So he just ran the heck out of there. Good on him. And Riker puts a force field right in his path because he only ran like 10 feet away from engineering before Riker was like, shut it down. So then Wesley, because he's a boy genius, was like site to site transport. Pew, pew. And just like freaked out.
Oh, he totally graduated from the Roga Danar school of like escape and evasion because he pulls the site to site transport. He does the like leave the phaser firing on the force field to like trick the sensors into thinking that that's where he was trying to like take down the force field. He crawls through Jeffrey's tubes. Like he is on it. And the music is like dun 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 dun. Like, oh, it's so good. It's the best part of the whole episode.
It's so good. And I was like, and I was getting really hopeful. I was like, maybe he'll escape. But then Worf finds his heat signature in Jeffrey's tube on deck his 7.
Thermal signature. You can't cloak that. You just can't, unless you're wearing some sort of special boy genius developed, you know, puffy sweater that like tricks the sensors or something. Cause those sweaters were back in full force. Yeah. I tell you like, they can track his thermal.
And I was like, dang it. Like, and I feel like I've never done that before. But that was a really good idea. But I was like,
probably after Roga Danar, they're like, hey, we're not doing this.
Yeah, maybe
again.
They did have that security retraining we suggested. So anyways, they catch him. And I was like so bummed when they caught him. They caught him. They dragged him kicking and screaming to the bridge.
Hold on a second. When they catch him, he's in the Jeffrey's tubes crawling in a junction from one tube to another. And he crawls through and opens the door and Worf is there. How claustrophobic did that make you feel when it's like, oh shit, you have to like turn around and crawl as fast as you can, which nobody can crawl that fast. Right. And then as soon as he opens the other door, Riker is there and he's totally boxed in. And I was
like, and he tries to get through the floor grate in the ceiling. He's trying to push the grate up to get out. And you're just like, oh, he's not going to make it.
Yeah. And it's completely like in vain. Like he's never going to get out that way. But, you know, so my first thought was, why are you trying to escape through the roof? Like you're clearly not getting out. But then the other thought I had was in that moment, panic. You're like a panicked rat. You're just trying to get out any way you can. And if you need to chew through the floor, then you chew through the floor and get out. Like that. I would have done the same thing. When
I would have done
like
the same thing. And I would have been like, help. I would have screamed help when no one's coming to help you.
Oh,
everyone's
addicted
to this game. There's no one on your side, but I would have been like, help somebody. I still would have done it just out of like panic and
100%
hope that maybe somebody, but no, there was nobody. And he was just dragged kicking and screaming to the bridge. And the whole time I was like, oh crap. I was like, maybe something will happen before they actually put the game on him. Like maybe there'll be something to save the day. And they force him down, force his head back, force the game on him, force his eyes open. And then he actively, because the way the game works is you're supposed to relax and then all the little discs go into the little tornado tubes, but he actively kept the disc from going in the tube. He doesn't even know how to play this game, but he is just refusing to let anything on the screen move. He is like, I will not do it, because that's the only bit of rebellion he has left, is to not
play. He has a little bit of play. Yeah.
Will. And yeah, you see that the power. Game has this like tornado tube far on the far side of the game playing field. And because he's not playing, the tube moves really, really close to the Frisbee and gets gigantic, so that the Frisbee has no choice but slide in. And then all of the chemical receptors are released in his brain. And you just see him kind of like relax. And Beverly's like, that's right. Just relax. Just let it happen. And you're just like,
last thing you need while you're moaning in pleasure is your mother's voice encouraging you to do that. Like, if that is not fucking traumatic, I don't know what is. One thing I did catch, Worf and Riker hold his eyes open. And as they held his eyes open, he blinked a few times. Did you notice that? I was like, okay, so that didn't work that well, but whatever. Yeah. And he's now like, and then, yeah, he's like fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. And then the disc, this Frisbee finally goes into the little funnel. And then you see him like, and then it's like the gasps of moaning pleasure. And it's like, ugh, again, I don't want to see this. And thank God it doesn't last very long, because as he's falling victim to the game, suddenly the lights die out in the bridge and Data storms in, fully functional. And he's got this like palm beacon in his hand and it's flashing these lights, and he flashes these lights at everybody and suddenly they're unaddicted.
Yeah. I mean, because it's something about that. I was fine with that, because it's something about the light. You know, when they push the start button on the game, these little light beams like shoot into their eyes. So I was just like, okay, fine. Light. Sure. You know, it does mess with the brain. We know that some people have seizures based on light flashing in their eyes. So I was like, okay, light, brain, that is a thing. Okay. Like that, that was good enough science for me.
I was just like, you're unaddicted by light. Okay. By the way, this, when they're holding his eyes open, that's how I felt watching this episode. Somebody was forcing my eyes open, making me watch these people all gasp and moan in pleasure. And I was like, I don't want to see,
you know, this. I was actually really like nervous at the beginning of the episode that I was going to see all these people orgasming. But really, I feel like it didn't happen that often. There was like the one time with Beverly.
No, it
was like three times. So it wasn't like constantly, like, which is what I was afraid it was going to be. And it wasn't at all. Cause that was my memory of it, is that it was uncomfortable, but really it was not that often. Mm-hmm. But when Data walks in, I literally cheered out loud. Because I haven't seen this episode in so long. I didn't remember how it ended. And I certainly didn't think Wesley got caught. I thought Wesley saved the day like he always does. But Wesley totally got caught and totally got hooked on the game. I was like, crap. Like, what's going to happen now? And then when Data walks in, it's like, dun, dun, dun. And he's like, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And everyone's like, whoa. And I don't know if it broke the addiction. I would say it probably didn't. But what it did break was the mind control. That's the thing it broke.
Yeah, so
I'm sure they still love the feeling and wanted the feeling. And I'm sure Beverly has a hypospray for that. But it was the hive mind that was disturbed and broken. And they were all like, what? And they came to themselves and they realized everything that they'd done and everything they were doing. And they were like, I can't believe what we were just about to do. And they were all just like kind of shocked and ashamed, I think. And I was literally cheering out loud. I was like, Data just saved the day. And then when he explained like, Wesley, you know, fixed me, and he was running around the ship to create a diversion so that I'd have time to do this. And so to come up with this solution. And then I've also rigged away for these lights to flash on every panel in the entire ship. So anyone staring at any kind of screen should get that mind control wiped. You know, almost everybody should be fixed by this. And anyone who's not fixed, Beverly can take a data, you know, a team and, you know, a flashlight and go and fix everybody. And I was just like, like this huge exhalation.
Thank God.
I did not see how they were I did not see how this was going to end well at all.
I'm so glad that this was like a new episode for you. I saw it once like a couple of years ago and I was like, I still don't love this episode. But so I knew how it ended. But I love that like you got the like, what's going to happen? That's, I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Like, as we're reviewing TNG episode by episode because we love the show so much. But there are episodes we skip and we have skipped for years that like you don't remember how it ends. So it's lovely to have like a familiar old show that feels like there's some new episodes because you're like, I don't remember.
Or even like with Silicon Avatar now, a few weeks ago, we remembered the beginning and the end and both of us forgot everything in the middle.
But not the middle.
So we're like, stuff happened in this episode.
Yeah, this is kind of new. Now, they end up tractor beaming Itana's ship and she's like, what is the meaning of this, Picard? And they're like, well, we're on to you and you don't have any weapons that could be any match for us. So we're just going to go ahead and drop you off at the authorities. And she's like, and then they get her off the screen, which I was like, yes. And the last scene we have is Wesley is packing and he and Robin hug and kiss and say their goodbyes. And I love it. And he has like rule 103, a few light years can't keep good friends apart or whatever. And I was like, that is so lovely. And that is the way you want a summer fling to end. You want it to end on a lovely note. So you just have nothing but fond memories of this like little brief thing. You haven't been together long enough to have any like really hurt feelings about it or feel any kind of sort of negative way where it's just like, you want to leave a summer fling feeling like that was really fun and like worth my time to have some fun for a few weeks. It was great.
Yeah.
And then they kiss and say goodbye and it's lovely. I have some final thoughts on this. It's not as creepy as I remember, but still a little creepy. By the way, Ashley Judd's kiss with Wesley was her first on-screen kiss. And I feel like, girl, you lucked out. You get to kiss Will Wheaton, who's like not only absolutely gorgeous at this age, but like such a sweet person in real life. That's like, oh, okay, cool. That still must have been uncomfortable for her because, you know. Your first on-screen
kissing on like screen with a bunch of cameras in your face. It's got to be awkward.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
But I will tell you, the jealousy I felt as a nine-year-old was like palpable. My little, you know, when I was 9 years old watching that, I was like, damn it. But like, of course, being 39 years old, and I'm like, oh, isn't that cute?
My, how the tables have turned. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's like, oh, yeah. And then the last bit of trivia I have is, sad. The game aired 4 days after the death of Gene Roddenberry, but he was memorialized at the beginning of next week's episode. What are your final thoughts on this?
My final thoughts were, I kind of said it earlier, I always skipped this episode just because I remembered it being cringy, but in rewatching it and like really digging into the scenes, I loved it. This felt like Sherlock Holmes, but with two people who were on a date solving crimes. I just thought,
yeah, that is really cute.
So much fun. Like, a crime-solving date, I would be down for that. Not like a real crime, hell but like yeah. You know, one of those fun fake things that like escape
like a,
room,
like a murder, yeah, like a
murder mystery date. Exactly,
like an escape room.
I just thought this is really cute, and I will definitely be adding this to the rewatch just to see the whole thing unfold again and Data come and save the day. Yeah. I was a fan and pleasantly surprised that this was not as awful and uncomfortable as I remembered it being.
It wasn't. I remember it being way worse. It wasn't that bad. I just didn't want to see the O faces over and over again, but it was really only like three or four times. So it was really not that bad. All right. Well, next week we are talking season 5, episode 7, Unification Part 1. Thank you guys so much for listening, for hanging in with us. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com. to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.